Welcome to the Work is Weird Now podcast. Whether you're nearing retirement, entering the workforce for the first time, or caught somewhere in the confusing muddle in the middle, you're likely sensing it and you're probably living it. We know we are, and we want to know why. Listen in as we interview experts and everyday people like you to find out how best to navigate the ever-growing weirdness of work in the modern age.
Oh, hey, Alice.
Oh, hey, Dan. Welcome to the season 3 wrap-up episode.
And we should say that we've just recorded almost the second half of season 4.
Yeah, it's almost so many episodes that I've actually forgotten which season we are in, but we are about halfway through season 4.
Yeah.
But let's go back in time now and reflect on season 3. How do we think it went?
Oh, just phenomenal. Another phenomenal learning journey.
And this is what happens when you record for many hours in the day. You lose the ability to speak.
But 10 episodes, 10 real pivotal episodes. So should we kick off with season 3, episode 1 with Tony Moroney?
Yes, that feels like a lifetime ago. However, the impact is still continues to be felt because it was such a powerful episode put out during Pride Week to align with the overall topic, which was how do we make allyship real, not performative? Felt like a very timely episode considering the kind of context that Pride Week was in this year and some of the sort of reactions to it and things like that. Are we moving forward? Are we moving backwards? What's going on? A bit of a interesting moment in time, I think. But what really stood out for me in terms of Tony's episode was his comment around how what he does in a work environment is actually to play up the sort of identity that he brings to work in order to make other people feel more comfortable. And I think often we associate, you know, identities like being LGBTQ plus in a work environment as being something that people might need to code switch, dial down, that sort of thing, depending on the context. But for him, it's actually part of his allyship to be slightly more performative than he would be normally so that other people can feel a sense of belonging and feel like it's okay to show up like that because he's a leader within the context.
And Tony's so eloquent on this. So he explains everything so well, so clearly. And I'm somebody who feels like I'm quite well versed in this, but in that I made some mistakes in the language that I use. But that was a vulnerability that I was like, oh my God, Tony, I've got it wrong. And he said, no, you haven't. But actually, the point that you've just said there, I don't know if I've got that right. That's the point. Like, if you don't know, don't hold back and don't ask. Ask the question. That's how to really drive true inclusivity. So phenomenal episode. And really good. Listen.
Yeah. Next, we had Sunil Malhotra.
Sunil.
Yes. I mean, what to say about Sunil? The author of Yoga AI. And the topic was, what if we turned work on its head entirely, which actually turned out to be a very good predictor of how the episode went, because I come to every episode kind of armed with my facts and figures, and I ask questions around, you know, existing structures around work and things like that. And what was interesting is that every time I asked a question, Sunil was like, wait, what set of assumptions is that question resting on? Why does it need to be like that? And it was just it was actually a lovely, and I'm using the term dressing down as if it was a bad, but it was actually a lovely just provocation for me to question some of the things that I think of myself as quite provocative around some of these questions. And actually it showed me that I could go farther. I could look more and farther at how we can change the world of work in order to make things better for people and for the world.
Yeah. I love the work he does. I love the way he talks about it and challenged us in that sense. And even though it was real big picture thinking, I took away some real practical elements that I have put into play in interviews so far. You know, he said, stop asking people about their experience in their career, ask them what they want to come here and achieve, right? And I did it yesterday in an interview, and it changes the game. I've asked the question to myself about my own career of what next, what does that really, really look
what
like,
what do I want to do?
So there's so many of those statements that just live rent-free in my mind. It's also one of our most listened to episodes,
and worthy of many more listens, so do go back and check it out.
Next is all about curiosity. Is it a superpower? And it was with Ruta and Emma from Blame on Marketing. I mean, another female duo podcast.
Yes, and they're a lot of fun.
So
we've learned
fun.
Actually way more fun than we are.
Yeah. If you haven't seen the video yet, go and watch it. But yes. It's so fun. Yeah.
Yeah. So they were really interesting actually for me, because I think about the concept of curiosity as something, a sort of quite big concept, and something that, you know, I naturally have. I feel like I've always been quite a curious person. But they really grounded it actually in the everyday realities of work life. So actually, it's not necessarily about being given the time and the space to go and ask questions and learn things, but actually, how do you use creativity to just make the day-to-day of your job more interesting? Mm. How do you, when you feel a bit stuck in a rut and things maybe are getting a little bit boring, how do you use curiosity to help you unpick some of that stuff and to add a little bit more energy and enthusiasm back into the role? So just a really kind of practical look at that topic.
Yeah, and I think it made us all reflect actually on the current time with AI technology moving at the rate that it is. And if we're not curious, we're going to stagnate and fall behind. Mm. And as somebody who's, you know, mid-ish career, I've never felt more curious than I am right now. And I'm enjoying it. Like I'm really, really enjoying it. So can you flip that and can you build that into your working life, your working day?
Yeah, highly recommend a podcast. It's a good way to explore lots of different topics.
Sure is.
Then we had Simon Lamb, who was our return guest, our first return guest, talking about when is work therapy, which we acknowledged at the time is maybe a bit of an odd question, but actually provided us with a rich tapestry of topics to discuss through the hour that we had with him. I think what really stood out for me was, one, his sort of impromptu coaching session with Dan, which she's currently cringing over, but actually was really interesting and insightful.
Well, it was real, that's
yes,
for sure.
It was definitely real. But I think one of the things that stuck out in my mind too was this idea of a vulnerability hangover. Mm. And actually, when you are in a work context where you're bringing people together and asking them to dig a little bit deeper and talk more about their personal lives or how they feel about things in a way they wouldn't normally, that you can't just expect them to do that, even in an environment with assumed confidentiality, and expect them to walk away and feel okay with it. You actually have to support them afterwards as well, and support the entire group afterwards to make sure that that confidentiality and that understanding continues. Because if you don't, you do what has happened to me many times in my career, where I've left that meeting and thought, oh God, I can't believe I exposed so much of myself, and then just been sort of internally cringing for weeks after that until I got over it. So I thought that was really interesting and good advice.
Well, we're almost, I don't know, I was brought up, you know, you can't take that in work. You can't take that stuff to work, like keep the two things separate. And word for word, Simon said, we leak, right? But we're human, right? And we do bring our whole selves to work now. And interesting to think this links quite nicely into the next episode as well, but work actually can be therapy for people on so many different levels. And I just think Simon is, again, so eloquent, and he makes people think differently. And there's always such a great response to his episode. So give that one a listen.
Absolutely. Then we had Charlie Beswick. Yes, I still don't know quite how to pronounce that. And the topic we talked about with her was who cares for the caregivers at work? And I know, Dan, you were really struck by some of the stats around that.
Oh, so struck. And I think it was like 7% of people, you know, don't identify. They don't even recognize themselves as caregivers. So they don't give themselves that identity to have access to anything that is available to them. So that just blew my mind anyway. And it's just a huge responsibility, huge, huge responsibility. And Charlie is, again, so eloquent, but she's a trailblazer. She's really banging the drum for this cohort of people and how employers need to recognize for them and what an asset they are to a business, because work to them can be an outlet, can be therapy, and they don't have to give it up to be able to do both roles.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that was the big thing for me, is it challenged my perception, and which was very much the perception of an organization. It's like, oh gosh, this is going to be hard for me. They're going to have to take all this time off.
Yeah.
And she reminded me, actually, we would rather be at work than be in the hospital with our loved one. We would rather be at work than having to take extra time off to deal with some sort of healthcare crisis that's going on in the home. And so, you know, these are people who, by and large, want to be in work. And when they are in work, then things are going pretty well for them. So actually, it's just a completely, completely different take on that population of the workforce.
Absolutely. And there's so much more to be said, I think. Caregivers and then sandwich caring. I think that's a topic we're going to explore in future seasons. But
absolutely,
it's a huge topic at the moment.
Yeah.
And then, how do we belong in a system not built for us, with Tammy Thomas? I have heard the word belonging so much since talking to Tamu, and I think it's now becoming part of our narrative. People are starting to understand it a lot more and be more curious about it, actually. And I think it goes down to that place of people are going to choose where they really don't want to work if they don't belong somewhere and go somewhere that they do. It's that whole thing around safety, etc. So yeah, again, another really eloquent speaker on this topic, but belonging is really a topic I think that's going to be at the forefront of conversation for the next couple of years.
Yeah, and I think we need to think of it, this is Tamu's point, I think is we need to think of it not as something that we feel just in a sort of logical, rational way, right? So it's not just about, do we feel like this is, and I'm saying the word feel, but actually do we recognize structures and support within an organization that relate to us? Or do we recognize other people who look like us? Or do we recognize those policies and procedures that support us? It's more than that. It's actually a somatic feeling. We feel it in our guts. Like we are built as human beings to desire belonging. And when we don't belong, we feel that on a somatic level. Physically, we feel that. And the flip side of that is when we don't belong, it actually burns us out because our nervous systems are all over the shop and actually we get sick and we can't exist within an environment that doesn't, where we don't belong. And so I think it just challenged again some of my perceptions around what does that actually mean and look like for people when that belonging is not there for them.
Yeah. And what should organizations do to help create
exactly
that? So episode 7 was with how do creatives even belong in technical fields with Alex Sukalski.
I mean, I've noticed so much since that episode how many people qualify everything they say with, well, I'm not a creative person.
Yes.
I mean, I hear it over and over again. And I keep thinking, like, first of all, everybody's creative. Mm-hmm. But secondly, it immediately disqualifies whatever idea or devalues or undervalues whatever idea is going to come out of their mouth's neck. So it's a real shame that people continue to have this perception that they are either a technical person or a creative person when we know not only is that not true, but actually the market's going to demand that people tap into both sides of their skills moving forward.
100%. And I love his tagline. It's like, what's a creative doing in construction? And that's just a true example. Yes, he's artistic, but take that away. It's creativity is about how you approach tasks, connectivity, like think a little bit differently, think out
about solving.
All of it, absolutely all of it. And I think the first thing that it really shone the light on was let's unpick what creativity means and stop aligning it just to creative industries. It's not that. We need to be creative in work and in life.
Absolutely. And then we had Neil McLean, who is from the Social Enterprise Academy, and we looked at what if we've been backing the wrong kind of leader, which was really exploring whether or not we can look to the social economy and the kind of leadership that's required there to help us understand more about what's needed sort of in the corporate sector. And is there a relationship that could exist between the two that would actually allow us to, in a more impactful way, solve some of the problems facing us as a society more broadly than just what organizations look at. And I think what was really interesting for me about that episode was this idea that actually when we invest in people, both within organizations and outside of organizations, we can create this sort of ripple effect of impact, right? Yeah. So rather than looking at sort of an ESG or a CSR policy and saying, we're going to fund this project or we're going to send some volunteers out to do this finite thing that needs doing. Maybe instead we look at how do we share this leadership development model that we have within our organization more broadly. So how do we start to train up the next generation of leaders within communities so that people can actually have agency and make an impact, not just in there and then in that moment or for that project, but over their lifetimes.
I love the example that you used about working with the sixth formers and that presenting that back about their perception on leadership too, because the upcoming generation's perception on leaders of the world right now ain't great.
No, they don't have great role models.
No. So it's a real interesting conversation.
Absolutely.
Then our hot AI topic of this season was, is AI at work cheating? Now, this was fascinating because it came from a white paper research that Dr. Tanya Kant and Greg.
You got that you didn't get the easy part of the name.
No, I didn't. Greg bought. He did tell me on the day.
Kowitz. Sorry, Greg.
Sorry, Greg.
We tried. Yeah.
Greg and Tanya, we'll cut it. they've done this white paper and a study with the University of Sussex. And, you know, just going back to the practical element, I've asked team members, are they using it? Not to trip them up. And I see a physical response to this. And they're like, oh, I'm like, it's all right. Yeah, like, it's absolutely fine. So the I mean, the answer is no, but this really highlights things around how to use it, the ethics that you need to know behind the different platforms, you know, things like that. So it's a real insightful discussion.
Yeah, and it's not just about training people in how to use AI tools. It's actually about giving people the ability to discern what is a valid, ethical, and logical, rational use of AI and what is not. Because I think if we only rely on AI tools for what they're built to do, then actually we can potentially step into all sorts of problems. We need to be able to also apply critical thinking to those tools.
Yeah, exactly that. And then finally, this one launched today is how do we shift from expert to leader with Naomi Regan. And Naomi had a stat when we had our first discovery call that, again, it just pops into my brain all the time. And she said, of her coaching calls, people that bring challenges into those coaching spaces with a challenge, they said that it could have been resolved with a conversation. And it really goes into... how many conversations are we not having and why are we not having them? And what is that then, you know, inhibiting? And the other part of this is, you know, we invest in people and people go on this, you know, this trajectory and they're really great at their job and they move from manager to leader and they have to manage and lead others. But actually there's no like technical training on this and the two things are very, very different. But we're seeing things breaking down around things like simple things like having conversations.
Yeah. And conversations is such a simple lens to look at leadership through because it's something that we do every day. And if you imagine every conversation you have as a manager or a leader with your team as being an opportunity to impart something powerful about leadership and what your expectations and behaviors and things like that, then wouldn't you leverage all of those conversations more than you currently do? It is literally, as she says, the tool of leadership. And I think that's quite a nice, simple, effective way to think about it. So that is season three. So everybody go and have a listen if you haven't already. As usual, give us some feedback. We're very open to it. We like to think that we're evolving. We know that there are a million and one things we could do better, and we're trying to chip away at that. But, you know, as I said this morning in an episode, perfection is the enemy of the good. So right now we are aiming for good. So coming up next, we have... this month in September, we are doing the Finance Forum series where we'll be interviewing a number of finance professionals on the run up to the Finance Forum in London in October.
7th of October.
7th of October. Yep. So tune in for that. It'll be similar kind of format where we're talking about all sorts of different trends in work and things like that, but sort of through the finance perspective, which is a little bit new for me and Dan, so you'll get a few questions.
Fascinating, though, yeah.
Yeah, you'll get a few questions of us being like, wait a minute, what is that? What does that mean? But, you know, hopefully that will help those of you who are not finance professionals to understand that function, which is vital to any organization a little bit more. And then after October, we have a number of exciting episodes in the hopper. Just to give you a little bit of a preview, we'll be talking about ageism in the workforce, which is something we've been wanting to talk about for quite a long time.
Career breaks, again, the human side of work. And also we've got a really interesting topic coming up on financial well-being. Like it's a big thing out there at the moment and that's going to be really engaging. But there's a real link to the three people we've interviewed today. I wrote down three words that each one mentioned: messy, side hustle, human.
Nice.
All three of them mentioned it. So it's like, you know, all from their different perspective fields. It's quite interesting to see how the world of work is emerging.
Great. Well, since we are approaching the end of the day, I am feeling quite messy as a result of this side hustle. So I am much less human than I felt at the start of the day. So I think we can wrap up here and just thank all of you for listening. And
Jacob's Massey for being our wonderful producers again.
Superstars. So thanks very much. And we hope to see you soon.